What is up, guys? Welcome back to the Zach and Pat Show. I'm Zach.
I'm Pat.
This is the show about manhood, fatherhood, entrepreneurship, and the mentality it takes to be successful at those things. And we'll certainly sprinkle in some helpful real estate advice, too, because that's what Pat and I do. You know, guys, life can be tough, and we can go through some things and struggle at times. But this is the show to let you know that you're not alone. So if you're someone out there who's going through a hard time, this is the show for you. What's up, dude?
What's going on, man?
Yeah, whoa, let's do some housekeeping first before we...
What is this stuff?
Oh,
my... NeuroGum?
Let me try.
NeuroMint?
This might be my fourth or fifth one of the day.
Oh, wow.
But it's a great, great product. Keeps me alert. Instead of, you know, in the afternoons, I'm a caffeine junkie, man. We were laughing about it before the show. I'm probably consuming anywhere from, you know, 600 milligrams to 1,000 milligrams a day in caffeine. And so this kind of has helped me mitigate that just a little bit because it's a small amount of caffeine per piece. So it's about 40 milligrams per piece of gum. And, you know, in the afternoons, if I'm feeling a little tired, I'll just chew a piece instead of where I would normally go grab an energy drink or something like that. This is something I use instead. So,
yeah, I mean, I love it. The one thing that I get, you don't get the jitters.
Mm-mm.
So it's great. It's about a half a cup of coffee per piece. And, you know, I use it at night. I play hockey and all of our games are late at night. So, mm-hmm. I don't want to drink a whole energy drink because I'm going to be wired all night. What's great is I can pop this in. I can chew it while I'm playing.
Right.
And it just keeps me going. It keeps me energized. And at the end of the game, like, I'm not overstimulated. I can get home and I can crash. So,
yeah. Yeah. Are you not a mouth guard guy when you play hockey?
Fuck no. I don't even wear a mask either. I got a half shield. Yeah. So if mouth guards are more concussion proof and it's non-check. So like even if I got hit in the face with a puck or a stick with a mouth guard in, it's still going to knock my fucking teeth out. Yeah.
I have to have a mouth guard when I'm doing jiu-jitsu, man. I need something hard down on, you know?
Well, right. But it's a physical sport. So you're
going to... I've bit my tongue so many times.
That and like bumping your head. So yeah. And with hockey though, like, now, it can get physical, but not enough to where you should be concerned about getting a concussion. Mm-hmm. So that's mainly, it should be more called a concussion guard instead of a mouth guard. That's what it is. It keeps you from jarring. That's the main cause of concussions from what I've learned. I've had six of them.
Yeah.
That was the main thing that I learned with those. And
keeping that jaw still.
Yeah. You know? And most of the time it's that you're jarring, you're hitting your jaw up and jarring your brain. And so that mouth guard prevents that from happening.
Yeah.
So, yeah, at this point, like if I get hit with a stick or a puck, like I'm fucked either way. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, our show is also brought to you by
Fit Flavors. Thank you to Fit Flavors for hooking us up with our own code. So now through the end of May, it's one time use. If you go online, you can get an online gift card and enter the promo code podcast50. And you'll get 50% off of your gift card purchase. So I went on, I bought a $1,000 gift card for $500. And I mean, I eat there constantly.
Mm-hmm.
And
we do too.
I'm buying 15, 16 meals a week
yep.
from there. And it's great because with how much I spend there, it's really helped. I mean, I buy that much. I've had it for about a month now, well, I guess about 3 weeks. And I still have like $500 left on that card.
I was going to say, what does 15 meals without the discount go for?
They're about $200.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah. It's become such a time saver for me. Mm-hmm. That's why I love it. I used to just dread, you know, prepping meals and meal prepping and just spending that time doing that. And man, I would never be as like creative as like these dishes that they make, right. My shit was...
With how much shit we've got going on between work, the podcast, and the other extracurriculars with kids and the family, your jujitsu, my hockey and coaching, and CrossFit. Your coaching and
watching
CrossFit.
Just Gaethje get knocked the fuck out.
Yeah, just there's just so many things that we do that anything that we can do to save time is mm-hmm. great. And, you know, me getting back into, you know, working with a nutritionist and getting back in check, I mean, what's great about it is it has everything listed on the label. And if you listen to that podcast that we did, like, it's quality control. They know mm-hmm. exactly how much is going in there. So everything is always the same. yep. and what you're getting. So it's reliable in the fact that you know exactly what those counts are, that's what you're getting in. And
tracking
for me,
your macros is so easy.
Exactly. And it makes it so simple to, like, I wouldn't be able to get through this if I didn't pre-plan my meals. Yeah. So now I can scan these in, lunch, breakfast, dinner, snacks, and it just basically maps out my day and helps me save time and trying to decide, oh, this is what gets me right in line with my macros and what I need to do to maintain.
Yeah, it's a no-brainer. So check it out, guys. Go to fitflavors.com and use promo code podcast50 to buy a gift card. Anyway, man, how have you been? How was this last week?
I'll be honest. Last week I didn't win last week.
Okay.
Yeah, last week was not a win for me. Battling sickness with the kids it wasn't a win in terms of time management. I could have done way better at my time management, and that's the thing, is like, I'm adamant about how my schedule is regimented so I can get this. So obviously sick kids throw that into a wrench, but I was able to get the things done that I needed to do for work. It was the personal stuff, like getting to the gym and things like that, that took a back seat. Mm-hmm. And I just have to remember, and having talked with Rachel, my strength coach and nutritionist, that I need to make sure that I put a focus on that and pre-plan and all that. And normally I do. But yeah, dealing with sick kids is definitely one of those things that can throw a wrench in it, and you just got to make it work. And sometimes personal stuff takes a back seat, and proud of myself, got right back on it. Yeah. One thing I did stick with was, my meals. I mean, as long as I was consistent with that, that was good. And I got my stuff done for work.
Yeah.
But personally, I'm disappointed that I didn't do a better job of planning for personal, to take care of myself personally.
Well, here you are, man. You're back on the horse. You didn't have a good week, so it's just, you're gonna make this week great. You're gonna win this week.
Yeah, veered right for a second, and now we're coming back left to get back on track.
Yeah, exactly.
How about you?
Yeah, I had a really good week. That's awesome. Looking back on it, I had a really big big listing for me go live, and we sold that one for significantly over ask, which my seller's stoked. I'm stoked.
Oh yeah.
I've got an even bigger listing coming on this weekend, and I've got like four more kind of in the queue. So I'm very, very busy right now. I've got, a couple buyers that are starting to come out of the woodwork, and, so I'm really, things have business wise I don't think they've ever been better. Really, I've kind of got the listing, my process really like dialed in with my cleaner and my stager and my photographer and my video guy. Like, I've got everything down to a fucking science now, and it's working really well. As long as, I can coach my clients into, kind of making everything happen. It's been going really, really well. So I can't complain there. We had Calvin's birthday on Monday. It was fun. Just turned two.
That's awesome.
We had a nice little, day. I kind of almost took the whole day off work. I did go get some running around done while he napped. Woke up in the morning, went out to breakfast and went to the zoo, and then I came home and napped, and then when he woke up, we went to the park, and then went out to dinner, we went and got him Chick-fil-A, because he loves Chick-fil-A. And it was just a great little day. So
that's awesome.
Really just take family first kind of day. It was awesome. But yeah, everything's going pretty well.
Good.
Jiu-jitsu's been going great. I'm having some success with some stuff, that some new moves that I haven't really worked with, and I've been really messing with it for a long time, and starting to see success with it. So that's super rewarding, because that's one thing, man. If you're ever trying to like learn something new, because you get into these patterns of things that you're like, okay, I'm good at this, and I could just keep doing this, and this works for me. But then, man, you kind of get bored of it. It's like, I've hit this choke so many times. I've hit this, I've gotten this guy, and I've gotten these people in this same move. You kind of find yourself following a certain pattern, and what?
You armbar the fuck out of me every time.
Sure. but yeah, I've been working with kind of a new set of takedowns, and like we were talking in the locker room the other day, and man, it's like almost hitting like a super clean takedown and like taking someone down is almost as rewarding to me as hitting, like getting somebody in a submission. Like, it's just when you hit someone with like a perfect clean takedown, and you just, and they hit the floor, and it just feels effortless. Like, it feels so good.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So things have been going really well. So I can't complain at all. Just just trying to keep everything straight, you know, and that's the one thing is when I've got this many irons in the fire, it's, you know, you got to kind of remember what's going on with each one. And, you know, that's just part of the business. So, and we got the social summit. Well, when this comes out, it'll be in just a couple of days. So that'll be really fun. I'm looking forward to that. We just had Ashley on. That was a fucking incredible podcast.
Yeah. She's awesome.
Yeah. What a crazy story.
I know.
What a cool, cool lady.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's just fun. Like, just the relationship that her and I created when we were in college. I mean, since day one, first day of college, like her and I, we were just like drawn to each other, not like any, just as friends. Mm-hmm. Like we've always been there for each other. Like she mentions it, like I was like her protector and she was my wingwoman. I mean, she set me up on dates and with some of her friends and it was great. Like we had a very good relationship and she's one of the few from that group that we've always maintained a relationship all through college, after college and things like that. And, you know, even when she moved to New York, and was successful. I mean, we still took time to like message each other and things like that. And I'm really proud of her. I mean, neither one of us were the best at school, at least in college. I mean, we did what we needed to do to graduate. But we both had that like go get it attitude and it's incredible to see how far she's come from there to where she's at today and just the chances that she takes, which I mean, that's how she was in college too, which was, I mean, like that was the thing. I was like, Ashley was one of those that I'd never worried about being successful just because she had that personality. So
yeah. Oh man. Yeah, for sure. That's incredible. I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall, you know, in your guys' dorm rooms.
Oh God. Yeah. There was some fun times.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure, man.
So,
well, you know, I think we kind of wanted to make today a real estate, you know, kind of focused episode. And we thought we'd kind of give you guys some insight into what a day in the life of a realtor and a mortgage loan officer. And you can kind of see what kind of goes into it. Because, you know, if you look at TV or you look at, you watch any of these shows, which we actually just, speaking of shows, might as well bring it up. Me and Gina are all caught up on the series, but there's this series on Max. It's all about Lake of the Ozarks.
Oh, really?
It's about, it follows around like these three or four real estate agents in Lake of the Ozarks.
What's it called?
It's called Lake Empire.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's really cool. It's like three or four real estate agents. Like three of them are like the fucking kingpins of the lake. Like they sell like all like the, you know, $2, $3, $4, $5, $10 million homes there. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, and then they got the couple newer agents. Like there's this guy who came in from Jeff City and he's brand new to the area and it's a different, but anyway, you'll see the same people that are like the kingpin lady, you know, she sells like all these million, 3 million, 4, 5 million. You've seen these gorgeous houses at the lake. And then the next scene she's showing like these people from St. Louis, a $250,000 house on the lake. Yeah. And like, you know, they've got this, you know, the champagne taste on a beer budget, you know, kind of thing. And it's just funny. It's really interesting to see. But, you know, just watching those shows, it's just like, man, this is not, I mean, it kind of shows you what it's like, but not really, you know, you can't make it seem so like staged dramatized. And, you know, I mean, there are some realistic aspects to it. Like, you know, I mean, there's, oh, you know, the agent tells them, yeah, well, they've already got multiple offers on this house. And, you know, these people are walking through, well, the docks messed up. That's going to be 50 grand off. And so they like write these offers that are like way below asking when they know that they've got multiple offers in place. I'm like, well, that's true right there. And then you find out that the buyer didn't get it and you're like, and they're disappointed. I'm like, well, what did you expect? Yeah, come on. Like if you got 10 offers in hand and you're hitting them, you know, 60 grand below the asking price, why are they going to go with your offer?
Oh, absolutely.
Like no love letter is worth 60 grand.
No,
you know? Right. And what I mean by love letter is, you know, there's a lot of times when you're up against multiple offers, you will like, I'll suggest my clients do it pretty often where you'll basically write a letter, from the buyer to the seller telling them why this house is perfect for you. It's supposed to kind of tug on the heartstrings a little bit of the seller. And I've had instances where the love letters, you know, love letters have won, but it's more because the offer was so strong with the love letter and maybe it got down to, you know, two offers and they were very, very similar. And they ended up going with the person, my client, because they had a great story that they fell in love with. Like, for example, the house that one of the houses I have under contract right now, I mean, it was the best offer we had. I mean, there was a couple that were, up there with it, but they're like, oh, we wanted this. This is fam- they have a, you know, they have four kids. You know, this was the house that my clients raised their, you know, they raised three kids in for 35 years, and you know, they wanted it to go to a family instead of, you know, just, you know, or yeah, that's what they wanted. So yeah, there are instances where the love letters will work, but it's not going to completely translate to money. Money talks. Yeah, money talks. Yeah. You know, like it's funny when I was, I'll just keep ragging on that story because it's the most recent one in my head, but my buddy, so these are one of my best friends. It's his, it was his parents' house that I was selling, and my buddy's a lawyer, and he came over when we were, you know, going through all the offers together. And you know, of course, his mom's like looking at all the letters, and my buddy goes, no, take that away from her. No, we look at the money, mom. We look at the money. Don't you look at that. You know,
you know? He goes, we'll look at those last.
Yeah, we'll look at those last. Let's figure out what offer we like first. Let's not fall in love with, you know, some sappy story. Because, you know, I always tell my clients, like, really, you know, if you need to exaggerate a little bit, exaggerate. Right. What are they going to know? Yeah. You know, like if you need to kind of sell the story, sell yourself.
Right.
I can see my kids. I can see us in this house, you know, walking down the steps and seeing the Christmas tree. And I can imagine my kids trick or treating in this neighborhood. And my best Murph, friend lives up the street.
Yeah. Murph, here's a business idea for you. Yeah. Start writing people's love letters.
No one wants me to know. You do not want me to do that because I'll put myself in the position. I can see myself butt ass naked on a couch smoking weed over there. Dude, when we were touring the houses for me, I'd be like, dude, I bet I'm going to be high as fuck over there.
Yeah.
Am I wrong?
Love letter.
Yeah. Hey, that might appeal to certain audiences. You never know.
I know my demographic, damn it.
We walk in, we see a Bob Marley poster on the wall, and Murph's like, oh, I got the perfect letter for this guy.
This place, the energy and the vibes are high in this place.
And there's lava lamps and
yeah. We all know what I'm about.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so just thought we'd kind of give you guys a typical, you know, an idea of what we do on a daily basis, because it's not just, we're not just, at least on my end of it, you know, we kind of get seen as, oh, all you guys do is open up doors and you make a ton of money. But it's a lot more than that. That's a very, very small portion of the business.
No, and here's the thing, too, is like on the lending side of it, like I'll be honest, most mortgage lenders, they have no clue what real estate agents really do. I was fortunate enough, like my ex-wife is a realtor, and I got a peek behind that curtain, and I'm like, fuck, there's no way I could be able to do what you guys do on a daily basis. Like, I know what I do is tough and all that, but what you guys, like the emotions and the things like that, like ours, it's pretty black and white.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for you, numbers work. Yeah.
Yeah.
You can't
really fuck around. I mean, there might be a little bit of gray area that you can work in on the mortgage side when it comes to guidelines.
When you know people in the company like you do.
Yeah. You know, there's things that you can do. There's things that you can do to work in some gray areas that are within the guidelines. It just comes down to interpretation. And if you're willing to fight for that interpretation of it, then, you know, most of the time you're able to get that. But there's not really an emotion involved to it. So, I mean, but again, good loan officers are going to try and bring out some emotion, just because, you know, everything has emotions tied to it. So,
sure. Especially when there's that much money being thrown around, you know,
but I mean, you're not just, for me, I mean, not every once in a while we'll get some parents involved, but I mean, a lot of times, especially young couples, I mean, I'm sure they're relying on their families, and you're having to manage all of these personalities and expectations. And I mean, just having seen behind the curtain.
Oh, yeah, dude. I mean, like, insane. Can't tell you how many times I've been going to show houses, and we've got like, you know, it's a caravan because the whole family, you know, grandma, grandpa, mom, dad, everybody had to come and, you know, check out the houses.
Well, it's like that spoof we did with Connor on Thanksgiving.
Right. You know? Yeah. Yeah. And that's true, man. Yeah, people will, you know, because, you know, you have your uncle that bought a house 20 years ago, and he's trying to advise you on buying a house when the game's changed.
Yeah.
You know, the game is always changing.
It's always changing. Yeah.
You know, the shit that worked 20 years ago definitely doesn't apply today.
Right. Well, I mean, that's why I know a lot of agents that focus specifically on investors, because there's no emotions. It's do the numbers make sense? And if the numbers make sense, they don't tie emotions to it. They're going to buy this because they know that it's going to be a good investment moving forward. It's going to make them money, things like that. But, you know, when you're buying your primary residence and things like that, yeah, that's going to change things. That's going to put more, there's going to be more emotions to it. And that's a tricky thing to navigate.
Yeah. Well, I work with both, you know, people that are looking to occupy the residence as their primary residence, and I work with a lot of investors, and yeah, I definitely see both sides of it. And, you know, there's pros and cons to both. And, you know, the cons to working with investors, in my opinion, is, you know, you're more than likely looking at rough houses that are not usually very high price points. You know, most investors that I work with are looking for like houses that have been neglected or abandoned, or there's a crazy situation with the seller and they're trying to kind of relieve them of that. But typically in that instance, there's probably not a very high price point, and right. and we're paid on percentage. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I might be out showing this investor, you know, a ton of homes, and you know, if we're looking at $50,000 houses, it's not going to pay me a ton.
Right.
But they are also the positive to that is exactly what you said is I'm dealing with someone who's not making decisions on emotions. They're basically like, okay, the numbers work on this one. I like it. I like the neighborhood, the house. I can see what it'll be. Boom. All right, cool. We'll buy it. No questions asked. And they're experienced in buying houses. So right. like, I don't have to like hold their hand through it as much because they do it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And versus when I'm working with people that's going to be their primary residence, it's a little different. Obviously they're going to live there. They care a lot more about it. They're going to imagine themselves in the house. You know, they're going to hope more than likely be there for a long time. You know, anywhere the average, you know, what's the average someone lives in a house, like 5 or 6 years.
Yeah. Something like that.
Something like that. And, you know, so they got to see themselves there for the next, you know, half a decade. And, you know, so but also what comes with that is usually higher price points most of the time. So, you know, that's why my business is kind of a mixture of both. I help both because I don't want to just market to investors because I really do enjoy, you know, working with my friends, working with people that, you know, are looking for their primary residence because it makes me feel it's very rewarding, and it makes me feel like I really helped this family out. Like I helped them find the place that they're going to live, the place that they're going to call home, the place that they're going to raise their kids. You know, they're going to have Christmases here. They're going to love it, you know, and I want them to love it. And that's one of the super rewarding parts about my job that I like.
Yeah.
But as far as a day in the life goes, I mean,
it's really hard to just pick a day because every day is different.
Yeah.
So like what's a week?
Like, I mean, well, I could kind of give you an idea of my week this week.
Yeah, I mean, you could.
You know, Monday was a little weird for me because it was Calvin's birthday. But let me just kind of look at like another Monday. So, you know, Mondays, like for instance, we would have a lot of times I'll make offers. If I have a listing, we'll make offers due that Monday. And maybe, you know, in that Monday night, I might be getting together with that seller, reviewing those offers, going through all the options that we have. Okay, we've got. And we got four offers here. You know, I think offer three is probably our most attractive one. It's going to walk, you know, you're going to walk away with the most proceeds, and it's the, you know, easiest path to closing, you know, with this, their inspections have been edited. So it's a little bit easier to deal with. So maybe I'm negotiating offers with, or I'm reviewing offers with my seller. You know, maybe I'm out showing houses earlier that day to a potential buyer I have. Maybe I spent the morning, making calls, or, you know, I'm either calling past clients, calling to check in with them, you know, just like, hey, you know, cause I periodically check in with my people, which that's a huge part of our business is following up with people, you know, not being forgotten about, you know, cause that's, you got to stay top of mind with your people. And, once you find your tribe and your, you know, your community that you've kind of built around your business, you really need to stay top of mind with them. You know, I've got a pretty aggressive follow-up system. I've kind of got some of my clients in this portal where, you know, I send them quarterly gifts, and I do all sorts of little things to kind of just always be touching on my people, always be loving on my people, just so that when the question arises, or you know, they hear someone like looking for a real estate agent, or they're considering moving again, I don't even want it to be a second thought that my name isn't the one that they throw out there.
Right.
You know, and that's I think why my business has grown like it has. And I treat every one of my clients, I try to treat them, you know, even from the beginning when I was helping people look at, you know, these very inexpensive houses, I wanted to treat them like they were $1 million clients because I always said I wanted to be the realtor for life. And I plan on doing this for a long time, and I'm not going anywhere. So whether I'm helping you sell this house that we're buying today in 5 years, or you're going to be here for the next 30, I want to be your go-to guy, whether you're whether you need, if you need a roofer, if you need an electrician, if you need a mover, if you need somebody, like I've got five of everybody and I've kind of battle tested them all at this point. And I've got someone, I've got a guy for just about any job out there. So I'm not going to go, might not be the guy over there doing it myself, but I can definitely give you a phone number to call a trustworthy and reliable person.
No.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah. It's kind of like, so it's hard for me to just pick a day, but right. It could be very different. I mean, there's a lot of days where I'm out driving around and like we got this flip coming on here soon. So I've been kind of running around last minute, trying to kind of get everything together. Cause that one should be hitting the market in the next 2 weeks. I did just kind of find one thing we need to work on still. So there's a couple touch up things we still need to do, but I'm going over there tonight with my contractor, kind of going to get a final checklist of everything that needs to be done. So looking forward to that. And that'll be one of my four coming on the market. I've got four coming on here after this weekend, this big one that I have. So things are good.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah. Been cruising. So
very nice.
Yeah.
So
what's a day in the life for Pat Doyle?
Depends. Pick a day of the week.
Yeah, because I like how you do it. You every day's got
every
a different day.
Every day is different.
Thursdays.
So Thursday mornings are usually, it's not a day that I'm working out in the morning. So that's usually when, if I don't have closings, I've got a coffee meeting set up. So Thursdays, and then I'm part of a BNI group. So from 11:30 to 1, that's blocked off every Thursday for BNI. And then
is that in person?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So we meet every week in person. But yeah, so usually trying, if I don't have a closing or, working out in the morning, I try and we'll have a coffee meeting or breakfast meeting. And then
with agents typically.
Yeah. And then we'll go to BNI, do BNI, get back from BNI. And then I'm catching up on emails, that I might've missed from the beginning of the day, to now. And then that's when I kind of will take a hour and a half, 2 hours to like problem solve, like solve any issues that come up. Luckily, I've got an amazing team behind me that usually has those things taken care of that I don't have to worry about. But occasionally things do pop up or questions are asked that they need my answer on. And that's when I'll answer those questions for about an hour, hour and a half, 2 hours. And then after that, like I don't schedule, like someone calls me. I'll be honest, it's very rarely that you're going to catch me on the phone when you call me right away, because I'm usually in, because I've got my schedule so structured that I have something at that time and I'm working on something at that time. So, I'll have my meetings or like consultations or application phone calls from 3 PM on. If I don't have my boys, I'm working until 9 o'clock at night. With meetings and consultations, like I'll try, you know, most people, like I said, they're working. So I have to work around their schedule. I'm not 9 to 5.
Right.
You know, so
otherwise we wouldn't be working again.
No, exactly. Yeah. So my schedule is very dependent upon one, whether or not I have my boys, but two, but also my clients and people that are referred to me, their schedules. I mean, for example, last night, you know, I didn't have my boys and I got a referral over and he works second shift for Boeing. And the only time that he could talk was on his like lunch break, which is like 6:30 at night. So I'm like, yeah, sure, man. Let's talk at 6:30.
Perfect.
So I didn't have anything scheduled and was able to fit him in that day. I mean, if you text me early enough in the day, I can usually figure out a way to get you in that day for a phone call. But most of the time people, I'll text them, I'm like, hey, well, you know, does this time work for you today? If not, let's look in another day this week and we'll get it scheduled. But yeah, 3 p.m. and on are usually my meeting with client hours. Mm-hmm. But also at the same time in the background, I've got emails and texts that go out to clients that on Thursdays that are pre-qualified, meaning I don't have all their docs or, you know, we've only done a soft credit pull. They haven't wanted a hard pull done. They just wanted a soft pull. And that's usually when I'm reaching out to them saying, hey, you know, I know we're getting right ahead into the weekend. Are you guys thinking about house hunting this weekend? If so, you know, these are the docs that I'm still missing, or I need to do a full credit pull. If you've got a house in mind that you're wanting to offer on. And that's usually, and I'll be like, if you do have a house, text me the address or get me the docs and we'll work to get you fully approved. And so, cause that kind of leads into my Friday where kids aren't in school on Friday. So if I don't have the kids, I mean, that means if I have them Thursday night, I drop them off to their mom Friday morning, and then I'll have the rest of the day. So I'll get my workout in, and then I'll have the rest of the day where basically Fridays I'm sitting there working up numbers for like people that are already pre-approved. So
they're going to look at houses.
Yeah. So I want them to make sure that they've got, I mean, you've seen the mortgage presentation that I put together. So I'll send that out to them and say, hey, listen here, this is what those houses or one house that you're interested in. This is the different scenarios or options that are available. And so, you know, the payment, things like that. So you have an idea moving in like, hey, is this going to be worth it for me? And heck, you might see the numbers and it could save them time from going to see it, save the agents time from running around with them and stuff like that. So, but yeah, that's my Thursday. Like I said, Friday is the same thing. So, Saturday, Sunday, really just on call.
Yeah.
Always on call in case something comes up. If I can't take it, I mean, I'm usually only not like able to get within my computer or something for maybe a couple hours.
Right.
But we can always be like, hey, all right. And that's a great
thing. That's part of being a team, man, mm-hmm. is having a team is you got, you know, you can call Mitch or call Christina or right. all the other people you work with.
And all right. And if I can't get to it right away, I'll reach out to them and try and set something up to where they can talk to them. If not, then, you know, I'll have the person fill out an online application and have them upload their docs. And then as soon as I get back, I'll get to work on it. But I mean, in this day and age with real estate and how it's structured, like I think the greatest thing that happened through COVID was like, hey, offers are due at this time. We're accepting by this time. So now, like when I first got in the business, it wasn't like that.
Right.
So like someone calls in for a pre-approval, like you got to do it right now because they're getting ready to write an offer on that house
right now.
Night.
Yeah.
And so.
Well, now it's like, oh, okay, well, it just came on the market today. We got 3 days to get it in. You know, like that's
right.
Nice.
It's
especially
nice.
Exactly.
It allows people to structure their schedule and it's made the process of buying a house, in my opinion, better.
I agree.
And
well, I never knew anything else. So.
Right. And I hope it stays that way. I really do. But yeah, so I mean, those weekends I'm on call. And Mondays I work out in the morning. I usually don't schedule too many meetings on Mondays unless I absolutely have to. That's the only time that works for the person that I'm meeting. But usually my Mondays are pretty open. So I'll work because nobody really closes on Mondays. So I don't have to worry about closings in the morning. So usually I'll go work out in the morning, come back, shower, get ready. And I'll have, you know, usually it's all booked out from previous days. But yeah, Mondays are when I do my power hour. It's when I'm calling agents and trying to book meetings for the following week. I'll do that for about 2 hours. You know, catching up on emails that might've come through over the weekend. But then, yeah, I've got it scheduled. Like I've got meetings from 3 p.m. on.
Yeah.
And then my Tuesday updates, when it depends on the day or how busy it is. And I'll either do it Tuesday or Wednesday. But yeah, Tuesdays, you know, usually do Tuesday update calls where I'm calling the buyer, buyer's agent, listing agent, just to keep everybody in the loop on what's happening. And again, meetings, try to have at least 3 in-person meetings a week. Whether it's real estate agents, I try and have at least 2 with real estate agents and then 1 person from my B&I group. So just trying to get it structured that way. Obviously things can change when kids are sick. So like last week, you know, had to readjust some things, but ultimately, you know, for the most part, yeah, I mean, I'm stay pretty structured on my schedule because it allows me to get so much more done and be more productive that way.
Yeah,
so.
Definitely. Well, there's one thing I want to touch on there that you know, you said a while back, but it definitely stuck out to me because it's what separates you from a lot of loan officers out there is the fact that you're not 9 to 5, you mm-hmm. know, because this, if you want to be successful in real estate, you're not working in Monday through Friday 9 to 5 business.
No.
You're most of the time you're like Pat said, you're working around your client's schedule. Like you have to be in service to them. Like that's how I think about it. You know, I spent a decade in the service industry and I think that's totally applies to what I do today because I am in service to my clients. And I mean, doesn't mean I beckon to every little thing that they need, but
right.
I need, you know, you need to put your foot down sometimes, but you know, you got to remember that you're in service to them and you got to work around their schedule. You know, we have potential to make a lot of money in this industry. And so you got to remember that, hey, you know, this is serious business. Like this is a huge, huge deal for these people. Like they're making a huge financial decision commitment and you know, you got to be in service to them. So you got to work around their schedule. You know, they might work 9 to 5. So that means that when you're working with them, You're working outside of their work hours. You're looking at houses on nights and weekends. And that's what separates Pat versus a lot of lenders out there is he will, you know, if you call Pat on a Saturday at, you know, at 5 o'clock, I guarantee you, and you say, hey man, my client wants to write an offer on this house. We need a pre-approval, you know, like ASAP, you know, within an hour or two, Pat's got it in my email for sure. Maybe even 15. I mean, he's had it to me even faster than that, but I'm just not trying to put a lot of pressure on him here, but I don't want to set the expectations too high.
Yeah. But I mean, if they're able to get me their docs super quick and I know that it's a rush, then yeah, I mean, that's like I said, the most of the time now it's not,
you got
really
time.
I've got time.
You know, and if you don't have time, it's kind of either the client's fault. Well, not the client. I mean, it might be the client's fault for, you know, kind of deciding last minute that this is the house that they want.
Right.
Or it's the agent waiting, you know, the last minute because, oh, I didn't realize they weren't, you know, I didn't have their letter or whatever, you know, like that's, you know, a couple people are at fault there for sure. But yeah.
Yeah. And that's the thing too. I mean, you've touched on it before, but like I said, I mean, I was 30 minutes away from officiating a wedding.
Yeah, I always tell that story, man. I tell that story anytime I'm talking with my buyers because I, you know, how it works is most people are going to come to the real estate agent first. They're going to come to me first. And then, you know, unless they bought a bunch of houses before or they're very familiar with the process, then in that case, they'll reach out to the lender first. But that's usually the first thing that I do if you're looking to buy a house specifically. Now, if you're looking to sell, it's a little different. But if you're looking to buy, I mean, the first step is to put them in contact with a lender and make sure that this is even financially an option. Most real estate agents will not go show you houses unless you're pre-approved. You know, I don't get paid to show houses. I get paid to close deals.
Mm-hmm.
So for me to go out and show you a couple houses just because you want to look around and, you know, if we know that it's financially an option for you, then hell yeah, let's go look at every single house you want to look at. But if you're not willing to, you know, spend the 30 minutes getting your shit together and getting all your documents over to a professional and making sure that this is a financial option for you, then it's a waste of my time. If you're not willing to, you know, put that into the equation first, because we need a little something out of you before we can, you know, commit. And, you know, especially with the changes in the industry coming along, like if you're going to start working with, you know, if you are going to work with a buyer's agent, which I recommend you do, you know, you're probably going to have to sign some sort of buyer's agreement before you even go out and show them houses. So that's just something to prepare for with the, you know, the changes in the industry. I mean, most agents were having you do that before. You know, I would most of the time. Some people I wouldn't. You know, it's definitely something I need to be way more diligent about in my business moving forward with, you know, the commission structure that's kind of changing in our industry this coming July. So, you know, that's a challenge and, you know, I'm ready for it. So.
We got some good news though. So FHA, Fannie, and Freddie have all announced that they're not going to take the buyer's agent commission as part of the concession. So concessions would be what a seller can credit a buyer towards closing costs. So FHA is 6%. Conventional, if you're putting less than 10% down, is 3%. 10% or more is 6. The buyer's agent commission is not going to be included in that. Which is great news. We're still waiting to hear from VA, which, you know,
well, that's the big one, man.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's the thing though, is we have been hearing that they're going to make some sort of announcement on it.
They have to.
Right. They otherwise, have to. VA,
you know, it's just going to screw every veteran.
Exactly. So yeah, it's nice that, you know, we're able to do that. So like I said, I mean, if not, it's not going to be possible for people to buy a house, but it does lead to the concerns on, you know, is the house going to appraise, mm-hmm. you know? So it's tough. It's one of those things like we're going to navigate it when it gets here. I mean, we've survived and made it through so many different things. It's just one more thing that we've got to adapt to. And I mean, I'm excited about it. I mean, it's going to separate the good people from the bad people and more.
Yeah.
Right.
The part-time agents are, I think that's going to kind of put an end to a lot of the, not an end, but I think it's going to, not that they're, I feel like that's already slowed down significantly over the last couple of years. Yeah. But I think it's only going to really kind of weed out the people that are not looking to make a career out of this, you know, cause that's the one thing that it really irritates me about our industry is that, you know, you can just go take a class and get a license and then, you know, you can, you can go out there and sell houses, and it's like you might not really know what you're doing yet.
Right, because when you they get don't that, teach you anything.
When you get that license, they don't. And they told me that when I was getting it. And when you take the class, they're like, yeah, you're probably not going to use, like, you know, 90% of the shit that you're going to learn or have to learn to pass the test in here. But
retweet.
You got to learn it anyway. And
it's the same on my side.
Yeah, it just doesn't teach you shit. But
teach
you
how
know.
To talk to clients, doesn't teach how to prospect for agents, doesn't teach you how to prospect for clients, doesn't teach you how to do an application. It doesn't teach you any of that.
Didn't even show us how to write an offer, which is like, that's like day one shit. Right. You know?
Without being in the field, it is incredibly hard to teach someone sales.
Yeah. I agree.
You have to get the reps in person.
100%. You got to get out there. You got to pick up the phone. You got to go knock on some doors. You got to put yourself in uncomfortable positions, you know, and I'll be honest, man, at least a lot for me when I first started, it was a lot of faking it till you make it, you know, like, you know, because you're so scared at first of not knowing something. And I, you know, I'll be honest, I got over that. I mean, I did have a great mentor that I could go to with any question, but there was multiple times in my career, and I still come across it still, where somebody will ask me something and I don't know the answer. And you got to be okay with telling them that, hey, man, I don't know that, but I will figure it out for you.
Right.
Like, I don't know. That's the first time anybody's ever asked me that question. Let me figure that out to you and I'll get back to you.
Right.
You know, and that's an okay answer. You know, if someone doesn't want to work with you because you don't have every answer to every question ever, then okay, maybe that might not be the right person to work with. But just because they sound like they're going to be difficult just from the jump, if they're going to.
Well, and I'll be honest. I mean, there's times where I'm meeting with agents and I'll know the answer, but I'll purposely say, you know what? I'm going to have to look into that, but I want to get back to you just because I want to be able to show them that I'm able to follow up with what I told them I was going to follow up on. And I mean, it helps me practice for when that time does come that I don't know something that I know that I need to go and get this answer because they asked and get it to them. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the greatest things that you could tell somebody is like, you know what? I don't know, but I will find the answer for you and I will get back with you.
Yeah. Couldn't agree more, man.
So, but when it comes to difficult situations or challenging situations, how do you handle those?
Depends on the situation. But, you know, I mean, you know, like I've got a client right now where, you know, we have to do a price reduction or a price improvement, as I like to call it. You know, let's spin it in the positive.
Right.
Yeah, and that's not the most comfortable conversation to have. Like, hey, guys, I'm sorry. You know, we've been on the market for several weeks, not getting any offers. Like, I think we're priced too high. You know, like, I'm sorry to tell you, you know, I was wrong. You were wrong. We both thought we were all wrong here. We all thought the house was going to sell for this. But, you know, the market's telling us, the market doesn't lie. You know, if it was worth this, somebody would be paying for it. Right. You know, and, you know, there's two reasons that houses don't sell. And it's either price or condition or both. And, you know, and this house is in pretty good condition, but I just think we're priced way too high. And, you know, it is what it is. Trust me. Like I always, and you gotta be sympathetic. You know, you gotta tell them like, hey man, I wish it was selling for more too. I'm paid on a percentage, you know, but yeah, like, let's be realistic here. Like if it was going to sell for that, it would have sold for that. You know, the market's telling us it's not.
Right.
You know, if we've been on the market for, you know, 2 weeks, we've had 15 showings and no offers, that's telling me something.
Right.
You know, like for example, I had, you know, that one sell this past weekend for way over asking, and we had 7 groups through the open house and 4 showings outside of that. So that's, you know what, 11 groups through and you know, two, or we ended up, a couple of great offers. So, but it's been, that's just one of the difficult things I'll have to deal with. You know, another thing that I've dealt with a lot is, you know, kind of making a client realize that, you know, hey, you might have a champagne taste on a beer budget. That's something I'll kind of say a lot that, you know, like I have this client that I worked with my first year in real estate, and this was kind of when I was too new and I didn't know what to say, but I ended up showing her like 52 houses and she ended up renting an apartment, after that. And that was a really hard one for me because I just didn't have the experience yet to tell her like, hey, this is what you're looking for does not exist. This gorgeous, you know, open kitchen with, you know, a 1500 square feet, 3-bedroom, 2-bathroom in this beautiful neighborhood doesn't exist for $150,000.
Right.
But We looked at a ton of houses thinking that there was going to be one that we could make it into that, or we could, you know, and I just didn't have the balls to tell her, or the testicular fortitude.
You're welcome.
To tell her that I'm sorry, but like what you want just doesn't exist. And you know, if you're not going to settle for something kind of more in realistic for your price point, then, you know, we might need to hold off until you're kind of in a better financial position to purchase a house of that price point.
Right.
So, you know, that's a hard thing to tell someone that, like, hey, I'm sorry, just what you want doesn't exist in this price.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just a realistic thing, and you got to kind of break some hearts that way. But, you know, and another thing that sucks is telling someone, you know, after I've shown them X amount of houses and we've written X amount of offers, and, you know, and I got to call and tell them, like, hey, that one didn't get accepted. Like, that's a bummer.
Right.
You know, I had to make that call hundreds of times. Or like, oh, I'm sorry, you know, they went with a different offer. I know you wrote a really strong offer, but, you know, someone else's was better. You know, it was better price or better terms or one of these things.
You let me know on the front end, like, hey, there's a bunch of people in front of us and it's a pretty competitive piece of property. So yeah. I just,
oh man,
watch your expectations. I appreciate it.
No, that's something I always try to, like, you know, that's one of the best things you can do as a buyer's agent is try to create a relationship with that listing agent from the front, or, you know, from the jump. Like, if I know, you know, and you get feelings from clients that, oh, they really like this one. Like, this checks every single box. They keep texting me about it. They're fired up. They can't wait for Saturday to go see it in person. And I'm like, oh man, I know that this is a really important one to this couple. I need to be in this listing agent's ear so that, you know, I'm getting all the insights. I need to be, you know, there's a lot of times in this industry where I make the joke to Zach, the guy on my team, that, you know, man, you got to be a professional friend maker. You know, you got to be really outgoing, and you got to be willing to, you know, you got to learn how to make friends
right.
quickly. And calling that listing agent, kind of bullshitting with them and, you know, making them like you. Cause it's like, man, if the listing agent likes you as a buyer's agent, it just helps your situation so much more. It's not going to guarantee that your buyer's offer is the one that gets selected. But if you're up against a couple other offers that are pretty similar and that agent, you know, seems like you're someone who's going to communicate well and seems to really know what they're doing, then, you know, they might push your offer toward, you know, in their client's eyes versus another that, you know, maybe that agent didn't even call them.
Right.
It's like, it's so, there's so many people that just don't even pick up the phone and make a call to that agent and find out what's going on with the property. You got to create that relationship. You got to know what's going on with that house if your client's really interested in it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I was taught early on is, the loan officers or sales in general, the ones that can handle difficult conversations and are the ones that are going to be the most successful. But in that, you also have to prepare the person for the potential of negative things. So, I mean, I'm pretty thorough in my consultations that I have with clients to kind of give them an idea of what to expect moving forward. Obviously things can change, but I mean, it's just one of those things. It's never easy, but I, you know, whenever a tough situation is presented, I always sit down and think, I'm like, all right, how can I best deliver this to make the client still feel at ease? So if I have to find a solution, most of the time it's finding a solution first.
Mm-hmm. I do that too.
You know, making sure I have a solution figured out. So like I've got a deal right now.
Like, we didn't get this house, but hey, I found this one. You know, the next neighborhood over, price very similarly, comes on the market next week, and I think it might be a great fit. So
right.
Let's look at that one. You know, like, you got to
right.
always
right.
have so, something on the hook, you
so,
know?
So, yeah, like, they've got a deal, tough deal. And everything that could have gone wrong has gone wrong in terms of appraisals and inspections and things like this and having to navigate through each little bump. And trying to figure out a way for someone that has limited funds for this to work. But, you know, but it all comes down to communication between the buyer's agent, listing agent, and getting all the information possible so I can go in and play with numbers and play with things to see what we can do to make something truly work for this person. And so I wanted to get all this information before I call my borrower. So before, and then this is all happening as we're recording this podcast. So as soon as we get done with this, I'm going to call this client and say, hey, listen, so I know these things have not gone as smoothly as possible, but we have a solution that we can think can get you to the closing table and everything's going to be okay. I just need to know if this is something that you're okay with. But being able to handle those conversations and putting them off is never,
never, oh God, it never makes it so much worse.
The sooner you can do it and make that call and rip get that it done, just off. Get, rip it off. And most of the time on our end, we build this up way more than what it is. So like last couple months, I mean, we're starting to see it a little bit more now, but appraisals have been coming in low. And yeah, and so those calls are never easy. But like that's the thing is like I called both agents and like, oh yeah, we figured that we're gonna come in low. I'm like, oh, I mean, tell me that. Like like if you know that you guys wrote a really strong offer, but you don't think that it's going to appraise, let me know. So when the appraisal does come in and it's low, I'm not like, oh fuck.
Yeah, doesn't break your heart.
Yeah, because I'm, you know,
you're like dreading making that call.
Because like I'll read it.
That's got to be like your, oh, we didn't get the offer. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's like your, we didn't get that, our offer didn't get selected call.
Exactly.
We got a call until the pre-appraisal came in low.
Exactly. And so, you know, it's one of those things where it's just like, if I knew ahead of time that they didn't expect it, then, you know, that makes it an easier phone call. Like, hey, all right, well, what were you expecting it to come in at? Because this is what we got. Making that call, like in my head, I was just like, yeah, this is a tough conversation that's going to be had. I just have to do it and get it done. But I review the appraisal first. Every appraisal now or have since 2008 gets sent to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and is part of their database. So they know and they grade all these appraisals. So I look at what it's graded. I look at the appraisal and I look and see, I'm like, all right, so here I was like, you know what? This is actually a really good appraisal, pretty fair. Or you know what? We might be able to get an adjustment, more of an adjustment for this and that, and we might be able to make it work. So I know all that going in, like, hey, when I call the agent, like, hey, got the appraisal, but I want to talk to you because I think there might be room for wiggle room. Obviously, we want our buyer to get this as low as possible. So, you know, I don't want to make any adjustments or try to fight this if the client's not okay with it. But both were able to, like, oh no, we expected this. We're fine. They're fine. They know this going in. So I'm like, all right, cool. So we're just going to leave it as is. But there's been times where like, all right, no, we need, cause like appraisal gaps or not having an appraisal or not having an appraisal gap.
Right.
And they're having to come in with extra money and they've waived the appraisal. So we have to figure out, all right, we're going to fight this. And I'm like, here's the thing. I need you to give me comps. I need you to give me comps. I'll call the listing agent. I'll see what comps they used. And compare to what's on the appraisal. And if there's comps that weren't used and we can justify using them, I'll be more than happy to fight this. And I've gotten good at being able to appeal stuff. And I'm like the one we had in Kansas City, you know, that one was, insane.
That one, man.
Yeah, I just talked to her the other day. She's doing well.
Doing good.
Yeah.
Good.
She's doing good.
Good.
So yeah, we were able to fight it and we were able to get more money out of it and figure out a way to make it work and for everyone. And, but yeah, it's just being able to problem solve, but able to have that solution prior to going into the tough conversation is always key. So
yeah,
know who you're working with.
Yeah.
Not all so real estate agents are the same. Not all loan officers or mortgage lenders or companies are the same.
Content creators.
You know, exactly. Like, you know, it's one of those things like I know people that take more time reviewing and reviews on restaurants they're going to go eat than they do their mortgage lender. And 100%. This is one of the biggest purchases or real estate agent. This is going to be the biggest purchase of their life. So why not have somebody that's doing this that has a proven track record? And
look at their experience.
Right.
And it's probably going to tell you a lot about your experience with them. Like, that's one of the best things. That's a great piece of advice. Do some homework, man. Right, like, just look them up. Google them.
Yeah,
look at their social media. If they're not on social media, it might be a red flag.
That,
you know?
Yeah,
like,
that,
I mean, not necessarily. There's a lot of great agents that are probably not on social media, but that is a great kind of window into, like, I think if you go on either one of ours, you get a very good like picture of what to expect working with us. Because, I mean, especially with this podcast, like, we can't fake who we are. You know, we're 100%. Zach and Pat. Yeah, exactly. We can't. I mean, you can't spend this. You know, we've got over, you know,
we're working on 40 episodes.
Yeah, we've got probably 40 plus. We've probably got 50 hours plus of us talking on the internet.
Oh,
you can
easy.
You can figure out, who we are,
yeah.
You know, and you can figure out pretty quickly if you're going to vibe with that person or not.
Yeah.
And
I'll just say, if you get something that's offered to you that seems too good to be true, odds are it probably is.
Yeah.
So,
all right, guys. Well, that'll wrap it up today. Thanks to NeuroGum. Thanks to Fit Flavors. Promo code podcast50. We are reading the book on mental toughness for the month of April. We're going to be doing a podcast all about this book at the end of the month here, just recapping it. So if you want to get the book, read it along with us. We'll be doing a podcast all about the book at the end of the month. So tune in for that. Make sure you are subscribed. Hit that like button for me. Comment what you thought down below, and we will see you next time.